Welcome back to Deep Space Podcast. This is episode 61, and we're talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Wow, you're really, like, emotional.
I was trying to bro out there. Like, okay. You know.
Oh, because you've been working out again.
No, just because it's like the ninth.
Feeling extreme. Welcome to the infamous podcast.
Beefcake. No. Anyway.
You went like season five, you went all Klingon
on
us?
Yeah, I got all jacked Klingon, ready to go.
Overacting Gowron.
Yeah, hey, this is the infamous podcast. I'm Brian.
Johnny's here.
Johnny's here.
Hey, you should feel special. I'm here. You could have recorded this by yourself. I was half asleep at home.
Yeah, well, you know, we're recording a little later than we normally do. Anywho, we're going to talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine tonight, today, tomorrow, whenever that is you're listening.
But you really, like, you just need to let go of the concept of time in a podcast.
Yes.
Besides acknowledging that happened 2 years ago or something.
Time is like a river.
Yeah.
What's that, Michio Kaku? Isn't that his whole thing?
I don't know.
Anywho. All right, so do you want to talk about some news first? Before
sure,
we talk about Deep Space Nine?
Yes.
Because we had some interesting stuff happen, whereas opposed to last week where we did our best, our certified infamous reading list.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the first things first, Ryan Potter. You may or may not know who he is, podcast land. He was the voice of Hero in Big Hero 6. Put together a really cool spec video for Ben Affleck.
For Batman.
Yeah. To be Tim Drake, where he put on a choreographed fight. It was pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
He definitely has the look for Tim.
Right.
Looks like he has the martial arts skills for Tim.
Right.
You know, and then he must be a fan because, you know, at the end he was like,
well, I think most people now are fans in some way or another.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know. And then in other Tim Drake news, he may or may not be dead.
He's dead.
He was very badly killed, you see?
Yeah, yeah. Was somebody in Action Comics too, you said?
So, yeah, which I didn't read.
I don't read either one, right?
Dude, no. Detective?
Yeah.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
It's totally worth reading.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be a trade paperback for me.
Yeah, you know, like, I can understand that.
A lot of things are going that way just because it's easier now.
So, I'm down to Nightwing, Detective. I'll get Batman for the next couple weeks because of the crossover event.
Oh, the Monster Men thing?
The Monster Men thing.
Yeah.
And then I just got Blue Beetle number one and then Titans.
I mean, I'm still picking up stuff. I mean, obviously, if people look at our list and that, they see that. But it's one of those things where you read a few issues of something and you're like, yeah, just get the trade on this.
Right.
And that. Or I've already buried the issues of this and I'll just pick the trade up because it's right there.
Right, right.
So... I mean, like, I think, what, not this week, next week's books are already, the list is already there, and Dan Slott was saying if you were a fan of Superior Spider-Man to pick up Amazing Spider-Man 18.
All right.
Not any reason why, just, I'm like, okay, I liked Superior Spider-Man, so.
Superior Spider-Man was an underrated run.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to read. It was a good change of pace.
Well, I think it's that whole clone saga thing is coming.
Well, yeah.
And I think Amazing Spider-Man 18 is tying into that. Yeah. All right.
So there's that. And then kind of stick with Marvel real quick. It looks like Civil War 2 is not going to finish on time. It's going to be later into the year.
Well, they already expanded it issue, right?
Did they do just one?
Yeah.
Okay. But like, it's Brian Michael Bendis. He's not really known for being late.
It's the artist.
Yeah.
It has to be the artist.
Yeah.
Usually like, unless you're Jonathan Hickman, it's the artist.
Yeah.
And it's no foul on the artist. It's like, give them time to do what they got to do. And that, and I'm willing to bet because they added an extra issue, that's why.
Yeah.
Is artist was like, well, I was done.
Yeah.
You guys said 7 issues. I mean,
what do you mean? I gotta draw one more.
Yeah, I was sitting on a beach. You know, all those hundreds of thousands of dollars I got paid to draw those pictures, and that, you know, hopefully there are some artists that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars drawing them pictures.
Yeah, yeah. So, All right, and then DC has been in the news outside of the Tim Drake thing.
Yeah.
We got our first look at the tactical Batman suit from the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
He's wearing the Night Owl glasses.
I told you it's a rebirth thing.
Yeah, you think?
I don't know. I mean,
if Patrick Wilson gets cast in like Justice League all of a sudden, yeah, it's like,
yeah. So. I mean, my thing about it is maybe it was a joke.
Maybe. Oh, that would be a great. Maybe it was, that would just to feed the trolls,
right? Yeah.
You know, like
at this point, Zack Snyder's got to be like, you know what? I just got to have a sense of humor about this thing.
Yeah. Well, because he had the glasses like on like the Seth Green can't hardly wait goggles.
Yeah.
For the Nightmare Batman, right? So. You know, he's not opposed to eyewear.
But you, like you said, why not just do the wide eyes?
Well, like, yeah.
Well, if to be, you know, sensitive to the nature of those movies, mm-hmm. the tactical thing would be the wide eyes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, literally like he could just rub over his mask and like the white eyes come down or something.
Yeah, like,
but what the hell? Why doesn't Batman just have tactical stuff all the time?
I don't know.
My Batman would be wearing some kind of eye protection because, gee, that's the first place somebody's going to go with a knife for is the eyes.
My Batman's name is Thomas Wayne.
Oh, okay. Wow. From Earth 2 or from Flashpoint?
From Flashpoint.
Okay.
Because he was one evil mofo.
Yeah.
Even though he was pretty awesome.
So you
awesome.
Want Martha Wayne Joker?
Yes, ma'am. Sir.
Yeah. See? All right. You're already getting confused about the sexes.
So confused. All right. So then DC is also involved with two lawsuits or potential lawsuits right now. They're trying to get Titans, the trying to trademark Titans.
Titan Publishing.
From Titan Comics, right. Titan Publishing.
Yeah, well, Titan Publishing has been around long enough. Yeah. That, yeah, it's not happening.
And they have the Doctor Who books. I mean, come right. on.
Yeah.
So there's that. And, I mean, then you have the Tennessee Titans, too. Are they going after them
well? Get over this petty bullshit. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Warner Brothers needs to focus on making good movies and good comic yeah. books and worry less
well, like
about
I
that.
Said, I said Disney sitting there laughing at them.
Oh, yeah.
Just waiting for like them to run low on money and then just come in like, you know, some kind of falcon and just grab them. And you're under our wing now.
So, and then the other thing,
DC and Marvel, both owned by Disney. Ooh. Now it's amalgam.
That'd be awesome. And then you have Whataburger, the hamburger chain. Is there still one here in Cincinnati?
I don't think there ever was one.
Yeah. The one dude from the Bengals had one. It was down there. It was in, like right in Oakley Square by Habits.
Oh, then I don't know.
I don't know if it's still there or not. I don't go down that way.
Is it Whataburger or fast food?
Yeah. But anyway, so they're going after DC and Warner's for the Wonder Woman movie logo because they're saying it looks too much like their logo.
Boo.
But Whataburger.
Everything looks like everything now. Honestly, mm-hmm. you know, you see a lot of symbolage that looks yeah. the same. And it's just for the fact that people's brains assimilate that stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're going after like a whole bunch of people who have like what a hay, what a pizza,
oh, well,
what a pickle.
Do you know what that what tells me? Is Whataburger has no money yeah. and they're desperately seeking money.
So,
because their yeah. lawyers are bleeding them out with these, you know, dumb, let's sue everybody.
Yep, yep, I agree.
What a infamous podcast. Bring it on, Whataburger.
All subpoenas go to Johnny. I'm just the technical support.
Yeah, bring those subpoenas on.
Anyway. All right. So there's some cool comic book stuff going on. There's some not so cool comic book stuff going on. But
hey, there's some local cool comic book stuff going on. We got a convention next
week. In a week, we have our home convention coming up where we will be there, hopefully trying to get some interviews again like last year.
Work the floor, Brian. Work the floor.
I was hoping you'd work the floor.
I'll be
this
at
year.
The Queen City Comics booth on Sunday. Stop by, see me. I'll shake your hand. I'll give you a hug. I'll sell you some comic books.
There you go. I'll just be walking around.
That'll be Friday and Saturday for yeah. me.
Yep. Yeah. If you want to find us and like chat, Saturday's the day. We'll be there all day, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And then
and if you don't want to chat, that's yeah, fine. Too.
Just ignore us.
Just stay away from me.
And then our pals from Roma Collectibles are there. Hive of Villainy is there. Is Mike's Vintage there?
No.
No, no Mike's Vintage. Obviously, Queen City Comics is there.
Yep.
Superfly will be there. Superfly Comics. Yeah.
Joe Caroni will be there.
Joe Caroni, where we're going to try and talk to him.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Anyway, all right. You want to talk about Deep Space Nine?
Sure.
All right. So I don't know if you looked at the notes when I sent you, but for the subtitle, I put to boldly stay put outside of a wormhole. Because that's essentially what they do. You know, they travel through the wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant every now and then. But for the most part, what makes this show unique is, one, it's not about a ship called Enterprise.
Yeah.
Two, it's not about a ship.
No, and not at first.
Three, you have an awesome captain. Probably the best captain in all of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
With Benjamin Sisko.
Yeah.
Who starts out as a commander.
Yeah, which was different in itself.
Very, very different. The other
thing... A commander with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
The opening of the series is the Battle of Wolf 359, mm-hmm. which for people who don't know... When Jean-Luc Picard was assimilated and became Locutus of Borg.
Locutus of Borg.
And the Starfleet gathered their ships together. It was at Wolf 359. Mm-hmm. And Lieutenant Commander Benjamin Sisko was on board one of those ships. And his wife died.
Mm-hmm.
And the ship blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And like most people, you know, you kind of carry a grudge.
Yeah, he's not a fan of Captain Jean-Luc Picard,
which is different too, because yeah. most people were fans.
Most people worship the carpet he walks on.
Yeah,
so the anti-gravity he walks on.
Oh, I was going to say the deck that he walks
yeah,
on.
Yeah, whatever, or the fake gravity, not the anti-gravity. But anyway, yeah, no. So this one was. I don't know. For me, this was the first of the series and one of two that I watched all of live all the way through.
I did not, because of network changes mm-hmm. and that. I think that like Channel 19 had lost the last two seasons.
It was on like USA or something weird. I remember.
UPN, like what UPN yeah. was becoming yeah. in that, which here was a local channel who had barely any broadcasting yeah. signal.
It had like, you had to be like out front with like a huge antenna
yeah
just to
I had it. A friend who got that channel
yeah
and recorded the last episode for me, and it was so grainy that it was like watching an old-time movie.
Nice.
And
you know what though, like, I bet that was kind of cool.
It was cool, kind of, but it was confusing like, too, because yeah. it's like what's you been seen. Going on.
I will say, of all of the series,
yeah,
this was the most satisfying finale.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the most disappointing finale. Because it should have gone into a movie franchise.
Well, it was, I don't think a movie franchise, but I think that they could have done like a, you know, like a television movie
sure.
a year or two later. Yeah. And that it's a very anticlimactic finale.
Mm-hmm.
And Voyagers is kind of the same way.
Yeah.
You Voyager know, Voyagers
is just kind of anticlimactic all the way around, but we'll talk about that yeah. next week.
Yeah. But I mean, the fact that like All Good Things, the Next mm-hmm. Generation finale had an ending.
Yeah.
This one had a vague ending.
This one sends everybody off to where they're supposed to be.
Right. So, well, yeah.
But no, so we watched, I don't know, I think I watched like 10 or 15 episodes.
Yeah. Did you put the list in yeah, the I think notes I put the list on that there. I sent you?
Yeah, yeah. It's on the site.
Okay.
So, or yeah. it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah.
The first one from the first season, though, besides Emissary, which was a two-part pilot, was Q-less.
Yeah.
And we
did you
Q.
watch Q-less?
Yeah, and that was the first one I watched because okay. I had watched the premiere not too long ago. And this, you know, seven episodes in, like I feel like they kind of nailed it. Like understanding what this show is, right?
Yeah.
Because you have Q showing up and, you know, he had his thing with Jean-Luc and he had his thing with Riker and
right.
Worf and with each of the individuals. And he comes in and he has this whole new... beast of human to deal with Sisko.
Yeah, where they get into a boxing match and Sisko punches him and he goes, Picard would have never hit me.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm not Picard.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, well, Picard never would have been antagonized so easy. Yeah. And it's like, you didn't really antagonize him so easy. He's, you know, he's not one that's going to sit back and, you know, wait.
Yeah.
He's, whereas Picard's surgical and strategic.
Right.
Sisko is a blunt instrument.
Yeah.
You know,
he had to be. And
especially then, because here he's taken over the station that's full of aliens. It's in enemy territory, essentially.
Yeah.
It's next to
like a demilitarized zone, pretty much.
And it's next to a complete unknown with a wormhole that things come and go from it constantly, which they have no idea what it is because it's...
Well, it's the whole thing of, I mean, the political system that's in place where Deep Space Nine is, the Bajorans, are at conflict with each other. Do you have the wormhole, which is the celestial temple for, you know, all intents and purposes, an alien race that, you know, somehow is tied to Benjamin Sisko because they've been waiting for him to show up.
Right.
And then when he shows up, they're like, well, you know, you got to fix yourself first.
Yeah. Get your shit together, Ben.
Yeah. So. And that's pretty much, that's the premiere episode, is like pretty much him fixing what he can of himself.
But which he doesn't fix it all in one episode.
It doesn't get fixed, but it's them setting him on the course of, this is not who you are.
It's like, sets his clear path.
I mean, that episode is one where they keep going back to Jennifer, his wife, dying. And they're like, this is where you are. And he's like, what do you mean? And then he starts to understand, I haven't let that go. Right. And they're pretty much telling him, you need to let that go before anything else happens. Because they live outside of time and space, so they know everything that happens.
Right.
And it literally is the thing where the first season is kind of him assimilating to the culture of Deep Space Nine, being a Starfleet officer, being the prophet, the emissary.
Right.
You know, the emissary of the prophets. That's what it is. The emissary of the prophets of Bajor, you know, which puts him at conflict on a different level.
Right, right.
You know, because then you're getting into religious stuff. This show had a lot of, I mean, I know that this was Ron Moore and Brandon Braga. So a lot of the stuff in this show is comparable to Battlestar Galactica.
You see a lot of the bones that would eventually becomes Battlestar being built.
Yeah.
You know,
religious questioning, questioning of yourself, being who you are. I mean, everybody on this show is conflicted in some way or another. I mean, you know, even O'Brien, who was on Next Generation, has conflict because his wife doesn't want to be there at times.
Right.
And at their kids there, you know, it's raising a family on a station in the middle of, you know, what could turn into a war zone at any moment.
At any moment.
And, you know, then you have Gul Dukat, who is very conflicted himself because he lost his home.
Yeah.
And he's very angry about it. And just from there, it's like every one of those cast members had some kind of internal conflict, which was something that you hadn't really seen on
it was definitely new. It was definitely new for that, where they were,
I mean, the most conflicted character between the original series and Next Generation that you've seen are conflicted characters were Worf and Spock. I mean, you know, others had issues, but Worf and Spock seemed to be the most conflicted characters on the original and the Next Generation, whereas everybody here had something that was bothering them,
right?
I guess, for, you know,
for lack of
for the
term.
Sake of saying, and but I mean, it's a really well done series. I mean, even their not so great episodes are good episodes, and it's just enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, it's fun all the way through, and you know, like it's probably more of the soap opera
than
most of them, you know, because it's less about the exploration of space and more about the exploration of, you know, and I hate this term, but the human condition,
right?
Like, and how a human reacts to a truly alien situation,
right?
Because the other thing that was great about this is this was the first time that we really saw a lot of aliens.
Oh yeah, this show, I mean, I can remember the Entertainment Weekly cover for the, like, one of the first articles for the show is literally a bunch of Michael Westmore aliens on the cover, and it's like, you know, obviously Quark is the centerpiece, but there's a lot of weird aliens. It kind of is like, you know, at any time you were getting the cantina scene from Star Wars in this show. Like, I mean, Quark's bar was literally chock full of aliens.
And you had Odo.
Oh, yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Odo.
I never think, I always want to say Udo, and I know that's not right, and Odo doesn't sound right, and I know it's not O-P.
O-D-O.
Yeah, I know it's not Odie.
Yeah.
But no, like, Odo was a great character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like everything I'd ever seen.
Rene Auberjonois.
Yeah. He was always like the
Clayton Endicott III, Benson.
But he was always like the thug too. Like yeah, in movies.
He played a lot of
he was always the bad guy's henchman.
Bad guys, so. And then he played like on Benson, he played the assistant governor. Right. So it's one of those things where the authoritative and the thug that he played before
were
combined together as so. This, you know, orphaned alien creature that nobody knew where he came from. Yeah. They found him in space and, you know,
in a bucket of water. He could shapeshift. As a bucket of water.
Yeah, as a bucket of water.
So, you know what the
and
problem
then he found
was.
A sister that could form into animals.
I was going to say he was missing his other Wonder Twin to get the powers to combine and activate.
God.
That just made him sad.
Zan.
So, yeah. Anyway, but no, yeah, the first season, you know, it's definitely one. It's a shorter first season than the other shows.
Right. It premiered in January of 93. Mm-hmm. And they did that with both that and Voyager, like mid-season premiered them because the other shows were still going on.
Well, because, yeah, Next Gen's still going on for both of these. And so this one came first. And then was it a season or two later, Voyager came?
Next Gen ended that year. And then Voyager came on 2 years later, I think.
But
and Voyager and Deep Space Nine ran almost at the same time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously we will talk about Voyager and that. But, yeah, it's kind of cool because they tip the hat to each series because Enterprise is docked at Deep Space Nine in the first episode. And the first episode of Voyager is docked at Deep Space Nine getting ready to go on their journey. And it's like, Deep Space Nine is the center of the universe.
And then the Reliant later on looks just like Voyager, more or less. What? The ship, they're like...
Oh, the Defiant.
Defiant. Yeah. I said Reliant, sorry.
Yeah, it doesn't look like... It's smaller.
Yeah, it's like a smaller version. I said it just kind of looks
Voyager?
Like...
A Voyager?
To me, it looked like that. I don't know, but...
Looks like a little battleship.
Yeah. But, yeah, I got to say, like...
A tough little ship.
A tough little ship. No, this was a... This was... It was charming. It was fun. It was emotional. You had characters die.
Yeah.
You had Jadzia Dax. Well, just Dax in general, where it's the first time where we have a symbiotic alien.
Yeah, that alien race, the Trills had appeared on Next Generation like for an episode, but this was the first time we actually got to see that culture.
Right.
And that we got to learn more about the Bajoran culture that we didn't get on Next Gen, because on Next Gen it was more the political things with the Bajorans.
Well, it was all Michelle Forbes' character,
Ro. Yeah,
and then the girl from
Cito.
Yeah, Cito. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, so you're right. We didn't get to see the factions and
anything that happens with, you know, when a country declares its independence and that there's more than one group that
it's going to vie for power.
Yeah. And you get to see more of the religious side of this race.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Kai Opaka and Vedic Barile and Vedic Wynn and that, who are all kind of not at each other's throats. But I mean, Kai Opaka is the leader, you know, for all, I guess, comparable to like a pope on Earth.
Right.
And then Vedic Wynn and Vedic Barile are like, you know, under her. But, you know, Vedic Wynn's kind of, they cast that so well. Right. Louise Fletcher plays Vedic Wynn and like she is just the snake in the grass. And that's another thing. This show had a lot of like strong guest appearances, like recurring guest appearances from actors that, you know, you see on everything or you've seen on everything.
Yeah.
And that, so, I mean,
and they got, they would reuse some Next Gen characters.
Well,
and,
yeah, eventually Worf becomes part of the main cast. So it's like, you know,
didn't Reg show up?
No, that was on Voyager.
Sorry. Mix up there.
Yeah. The only like crossover with other characters, there was like a Next Generation two-parter where Deep Space Nine characters interacted with,
the Enterprise crew.
Which totally makes sense that the Enterprise would come to Deep Space Nine every once in a while.
To drop supplies. And then, you know, the other character who I always enjoyed was Prince Doran. I'm sorry, Dr. Bashir.
Oh, yeah.
So, God, he looked so young.
He was so young.
And David and I were talking about him this week.
Yeah.
And, he's so pale, like, but it looks like he's wearing makeup all the time.
Well,
and so the question, like, David,
the thing like, that was we is about, yeah. the first two seasons, he's in the cast, he's named Siddiq El-Fadil.
Yeah.
And then he changed his name to Alexander Siddiq because, you know, the culture of this world.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, they did tone him down a little bit.
Do you think? Okay.
But his uncle is Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I did not know that. His uncle's Malcolm McDowell, which always was like a funny thing
That's really cool. He was such a good character, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Bashir well,
he was the character that was us entering this world because he had just come out of Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, we got to Deep Space Nine with him and Sisko.
Yeah,
and he was the
I think like him, Jadzia, and Sisko all like arrived within a day of each other.
Right,
and that O'Brien was there, and you know, and it's like O'Brien's just gonna be there.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite characters.
I love
because
yeah,
you know he's the everyman.
I like that actor too.
Yeah, Colmeany.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, but no. The cool thing about Bashir is like he was the pimp. You know, he was the Kirk, the Riker. You know, he was the ladies' man, but he always had the stories that never quite went anywhere.
Well, it was, you know, one of
that,
those
like,
things
the pickup lines that like. You know, he would pick up the girls, but like his pickup lines, the way they were, like the stories were all like this big, exciting thing. But I just watched it from a view screen.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, it was one of those things where at first he was just like, you know, the young guy that was on the prowl and that. And then eventually he got involved with one of Quark's Dabo girls, Lita, and that, which was cool because they introduced that character. And eventually she doesn't want to be with him. Right. She wants to be with Quark's brother.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, yeah, that's the type of stuff that you would see happen. I mean, the first episode, he's hitting on Jadzia, not knowing that she's, you know, been around as long as she has. He just knows that she has that symbiont
that
in
she's
her.
A dude.
Yeah. Well, she's been a male and female for 8 generations.
She's a man. Yeah. So, but he ends up with Dax eventually. So
Ezri Dax.
So, who was played by Nicole DeBoer,
yeah,
who was from The Dead Zone on USA with Anthony Michael Hall and a bunch of other stuff. But,
I mean, this whole cast, I mean, you know, you had, and her name just left my head, Kira Nerys.
Oh, the actress or the...
Yeah, the actress's name.
I don't remember.
I forget.
So. Hold on. I have it right here.
Okay.
But, yeah, so you have her.
Which she was a great character because that was the person that kept you attached to what was going on Bajor.
Yeah, she was the alien.
Well, it was the whole thing that she had fought for the freedom. You know, she was the freedom fighter that, you know, got picked to be Sisko's second in command and that. So
his number one.
Yeah. Yeah, he never called her that.
Yeah. That was a...
Major Kira.
Yeah. Nina or Nana Visitor?
Yeah, Nana Visitor. Yeah, yeah, that's it. I'm sorry. I forgot her name.
But
I've met every single cast member from the show except Colmeany.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because she started out as Major Kira.
Yeah.
And then she was Colonel. And then at the end, she was Commander. It was a great cast.
I mean, this show was a family show as much as it was anything because Sisko had his son and, you know, it was raising your son on the frontier like that and showing. This one was truly the closest to Gene's vision of the wagon train to the stars. This was, you know, the rifleman and the stars because it was literally a town. Yeah, I mean, more riflemen because, you know, he was the sheriff and, all that. And it was, he had a son. And a lot of the stories that, you know, circle around Sisko are with his son and that.
And speaking of son, what's his name? Sirach Lofton?
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
As Jake Sisko.
Yeah.
I do have to say, this is one of the, and we're just like gushing all over the show.
Sure,
but this was one of the best shows that handled a kid main character actor growing up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he grew like 3 or 4 inches between the first and second seasons.
Yeah.
And then he grew like a foot, you know? And, you know, they let him grow up in a way that I feel like they learned from the mistakes they made with Wesley Crusher.
Definitely. Definitely. Because he didn't want to join Starfleet.
No.
He
became a journalist.
He didn't have the aptitude, really, for Starfleet. And it was one of those things where, by the time that he becomes a man, you know, because I think at a certain point you could say that Jake becomes a man on this show. He decides he's going to be, you know, a news reporter for the Federation News Service and becomes his own person. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, you know, when they abandon the station for the Dominion invasion, he stays behind.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not what Ben would have wanted him to do, but, you know, it's what Jake chose to do.
Yeah, and you know, like
The characters
really
on the show evolved.
Yeah.
A lot.
Every single one of them.
Yeah. Like, even, like, ones that, you know, there's a... Like, I have a designation for there's a main cast on the show, and there's a recurring main cast.
Yeah.
And then there's a recurring cast. And the recurring main cast was, like, Nog and Rom, which were Quark's brother and nephew.
Right. And Nog was a great character who, again, got the chance to grow.
Evolved.
And at the end, like, I mean, he was instrumental.
Yeah.
In the final battle against the Dominion.
I mean, Gul Dukat. Was a major recurring character. And so it was like one of those things where this show, unlike Next Gen and unlike Voyager to a more of a point, they had an ever-expanding cast on that show. And sometimes sometimes the stories weren't even focused on a main cast member. They were focused on a recurring cast member because Garrick became, I think he should have been a main cast member.
Right.
And that, I mean, you know, he was a great character.
Yep. I think one of the reasons for that is because it was a stationary thing.
Yeah.
Like, if Next Gen would have done that, I'd been like, okay, there's only so many people who can live on this boat. And then Voyager.
But you're like, they're in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
On Next Generation, the Enterprise was 1,000 people on that ship. And it's like, we're only going to focus on these 8.
Well, they only had the budget for the 2 X-Men. It was so weird.
Oh, is that what it was? Jeez.
But everything comes back to Deadpool.
No, yeah?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, so getting back to Garrick, that was Andrew Robinson, who had played the Scorpio Killer in Dirty Harry.
Yep.
That dude, like, was always knocking out of the park as that character. Yep.
So the last human I want to talk about is Cassidy.
Yeah.
Who was played by Penny Johnson Gerald.
Yeah.
Who was President Palmer's wife on 24. I think
years after Deep Space
Nine. Yeah, years after Deep Space Nine, which she killed at that role because you hated her.
Oh, okay.
You know, I never watched it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that. We'll do a 24.
Ooh.
We'll just watch the first 3 seasons because then after that, it's all the same thing. But no, she was great in this for the last 4 seasons. And like, it was always really fun to watch her with Sisko
and
the way that relationship, because she was a freighter captain and an explorer.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a schoolmarm. Yeah. You know, again.
He's the sheriff of the town and she's out running supplies.
Right. And you know, so it was
what was the whole thing
it was
where
such a cool dynamic.
Like I said, they evolved the character and, you know, he let go of Jennifer you know, when, you know, if you've been in a serious relationship and that relationship ends, eventually you're going to get back on the horse. And Jake was the one that
was pushing it.
Yeah, because he had become, it was funny because Jake had become friends with her just because he had that, I think before they even before the writers even knew that they were doing him, going to have him be a, you know, a reporter in that, they knew that he was something of a writer.
Yeah.
Like, and it was the thing where he met Cassidy just on the promenade and, you know, started talking to her and got to know her. And she's like, you know, talking about her brother who lives on Cestus 3, which I thought was a cool nod to the original track because that's where the Gorn had attacked, and got to know him and said, well, my brother plays on a baseball team on Cestus 3. And it's like, well, we love baseball. My dad loves baseball.
He and his dad were huge baseball fans. He wore the San Francisco Giants hat, which I loved. Yeah. Like, I'm not a San Francisco Giants fan, but I love that he wore that
because,
you know, it was the first time really that, you know, like whenever they make historical references in Star Trek, it's always goddamn Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You know, and like to see like a modern, like, you know, thing. And it's like, you know, to think that, you know, baseball survived.
Yeah. I mean that. Well, it was the whole thing that, you know, baseball was making a resurgence, I guess you would say, because baseball had ended on Earth before World War III had happened. And that, but Ben always had the baseball on his desk. And it's like, you know, how awesome is that, that, you know, you made him more human by making him a fan of a sport that we all know.
Yeah.
It was the thing where I think because of that, Jake was able to get Ben to talk to Cassidy.
Yep.
And then it just grew from there.
So because
at first it was like, they might just be friends.
It was contentious.
Yeah,
a
it was like,
bit too,
yeah, they so, might just yeah. be friends. It may not turn into a relationship, which would have been cool too.
Yeah.
And that, but eventually it evolves into a relationship yeah. that.
And when she's pregnant, it's yeah, hilarious. But,
it kind of dooms him, though.
But
I mean,
to the baseball on
yeah.
his desk. All I can know, every time I see it, I always think of the Sandlot.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Baby Ruth, who is she? You know, because I know it's not a Babe Ruth signed ball.
Right.
But like, I don't know. That's what always pops into my head.
Well, and so. They did the episode where it was
the
baseball
dreams,
episode,
thing,
the
yeah.
Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite
yeah.
is what it's called. And it was literally Benjamin had a foil, mm-hmm. a Vulcan captain,
yeah.
who he had been playing against for years in
yeah.
different venues, and that captain comes to Deep Space Nine and says, are we having a game again? You know
yeah.
the gauntlet's laid down pretty much. So he gets together a bunch of the crew members and teaches them how to play baseball.
Yep.
And it's just one of the funnest, like
yeah.
this episode is literally taking place during the darkest times of Deep Space Nine during the war, and this is just a light, funny episode with the whole family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like at the end, they all signed a baseball with their characters' names.
Oh, okay.
And threw it to him.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, I want that ball.
That would be awesome. So you should get a ball and go around.
Yeah, have them sign it as the characters.
Now, the other cool thing about this show is that it had the overarching theme of, you know, the Gamma Quadrant
yeah.
and the wormhole and the Cardassians.
Yeah.
But you had the Maquis.
Yep.
You had the Dominion War. You had Section 31 really
yeah.
being expanded for the first time.
Well, being introduced.
Well,
they
yeah.
had never
Sorry,
introduced
yeah.
Section 31.
You're right, you're right, you're right. You had the Ferengi.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's what this show explored. Like you said, it was stationary, but not.
Right.
So it explored more of the cultures of the whole Star Trek universe, because
mm-hmm.
we got to see the Ferengi homeworld for the first time and understand their culture a little better. Even though it was all based on greed and profit
right.
and that. I mean, you got to go to the Trill home world and see
mm-hmm.
how symbionts picked their, you know, their host pretty much, and find out
Hint,
some dark
it's
things
just
about
like
Dax.
Picking a lobster.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you got to find out some dark past about the Dax symbiont
yeah.
and one of its hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, we got to travel in time multiple times,
mm-hmm.
including, you know, back to the original USS Enterprise.
Yep.
And that, it's just, it was a fun show that was put together well and mm-hmm. ran well. I mean, Iris Stephen Bear was the,
yeah. oh,
like,
the
supervising producer
yeah.
and ran the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a really good job.
But, you know, and then the Dominion War. Like, I think we would be remiss if we don't talk about it.
The darkest times.
It is, yeah. It's the, if you watch Doc Community, this is the darkest timeline. But no, it's really the first time that we saw the all-out war.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's Trek. They had talked about
mm-hmm.
the Cardassian Wars, the Klingon Wars, the Romulan
Wars,
and that. But this was literally getting to watch starships being blown to
Which
pieces.
Was great.
Yeah, the effects crew on this show was knocking it out of the park the last, like, three or four seasons where
yep.
you just seen, like, craziness happens.
Just the different ships that would come through, the different aliens,
yeah.
the different just effects.
The alliance
you know.
With the Klingons fell apart
yep.
and that, and then was reignited. And
Thanks,
you know,
Worf.
It's just one of the, it was fun because the Dominion was an enemy that had never really been in that universe
right.
before. Because I mean, shapeshifters turning into anybody, it was like showing a level of paranoia that you had never seen in the Federation before on any of the tracks.
Right.
And it was just an interesting way to go about it.
Yeah.
And I think that even if they wouldn't have brought Worf on, that storyline was already like really good
yeah.
because they had introduced the Jem'Hadar at the end of the second or third season. And pretty much from there, it was a warning of what was to come.
Right.
And I mean, once the founders showed up, it was like, oh, now we know what our enemy is.
Yeah, there was so much. They did such a good job.
Odos.
They did such a good job foreshadowing.
Yeah,
and then paying off.
Oh yeah, yeah. It wasn't one of those things where they left you hanging too long.
There were no
stuff.
Loose ends.
Yeah,
you know, and not that like everything was neatly buttoned up,
right?
But there were no like, hey, wait a second, what about you know, like Lost? There were a bunch of loose ends.
Well, yeah.
Like Next Gen, there were a bunch of loose ends. Like Enterprise, it's all loose end.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I guess.
But no, I appreciated this one for when they did time travel, it was good.
Yeah.
When they did the holodeck, they did not overuse or the holosuite, as the case may be. It was not the crutch that it was for Next Gen.
No, I mean, the few times they used it were like for the story purposes. I mean, Vic Fontaine was introduced in, you know, this 1960s lounge, Las Vegas lounge singer. And he became pretty much like the counselor.
He was Quark's best friend.
Oh, yeah. He was Quark's best friend. He had helped Rom when Rom was suffering from PTSD, which, you know, they acknowledged PTSD on this show. And that before, you know, and this the amazing thing is a lot of the war stories on the show, it all happened before 9/11.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was one of those things where, you know, you understand a little bit more about war because there's like a really dark episode called The Siege of AR-255 or something like that.
Right.
And it's just a very dark war episode.
I mean, the show ran from 93 to 99.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, it's, you know, I don't, living in a post 9/11 world.
Yeah.
Like this show doesn't get made the way it gets made.
No, it would be much darker, I think.
Which it couldn't be to be successful.
Right.
So
I mean, you know, everything about the show is why I've always said it's my favorite Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's mine as well.
I mean, you know, I've made it a task to meet everybody from every Star Trek, but this was the one where it was like when I knew that Avery Brooks was going to be at a convention 2 hours away, I'm like, right. I'm not going to work that day. I'm going, and that's like,
I can't come.
Oh, no, I gotta
go meet Avery Brooks. I mean, just I don't feel good.
One of those things where you're like, you know, this is my favorite captain, one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I have been a fan of his since the 80s when he was on Spencer for Hire. And that, and you know, that was one where he smiled a lot. And, you know, he was serious, but he smiled a lot. And then this, where he barely smiled at all.
He never cracks a smile.
Yeah.
Like to the point where in the last episode, when he cracks the smile, they're like, oh, Benjamin, you should smile more.
Yeah. And that, you know, I don't think that I really had any issues with the show. And I just remember there was a lot of controversy when Worf came on because it was, oh, you know, you're using a crutch there. Right. That's pretty much what people were saying. And it wasn't. It was bringing in somebody to ignite a bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, bringing Worf in, bringing the Klingons in to that story and showing that not everybody was happy with what's going on with the Founders and with the Dominion was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then Worf, you know, and Jadzia falling in love. It was like, that was fun to watch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those two really played off of each other, like, really well.
Well, they were both warriors.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, but, I mean, you know, Terry Farrell is beautiful. Oh. And, you know.
She's okay.
When she first meets Worf and she says something to him in Klingon and he just like, you know, he's like, what?
He was in love.
Yeah, it pretty much. It was like love at first sight kind of thing. And it was like, that was fun.
Love at first.
Yeah.
I don't speak Klingon. I'm a nerd, but
Parmok. I have my limits. Parmok.
Oh, God.
Well, no, because there's an episode called Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places.
You're so fired.
Yeah.
Yes, you got fired for once.
Yay!
But, okay, so real quick, Avery Brooks, okay?
You can't fire me. I quit.
He was in American History X
as
the principal.
Yeah.
And he was amazing in that role.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love him most for outside of Star Trek is The Big Hit with Mark Wahlberg and Antonio Sabato Jr. and Lou Diamond Phillips. And there's a scene where they're talking about busting some caps. And he's like, bust some caps, like all like high pitched. It's like, oh God, I just want, because he was still playing Sisko at the time.
Yeah.
It's like, they need to bring this to DS9.
Well, that's
like,
what I'm saying. Yeah. If you ever like, you know, just go on YouTube and look for Spencer for Hire, because like,
oh, as Hawk, he was
Hawk. Yeah. It's just like, you know, man, for him, when they announced him as, you know, the captain, because they weren't calling him commander at the time. When they announced him, I'm like, well, this show's just going to be good.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't know of anybody else who was even cast on that show. And they said, Avery Brooks is going to be on this new Star Trek. And I'm like, I don't even care what it's about.
So here's the other best thing about this, right? They cast an African-American black guy, whatever, as the main character.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a ton of press releases about it. They didn't, you know, the cast was diverse.
Yeah.
You know?
This was probably the most diverse, Star Trek cast.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of, the Discovery, did you see got pushed back?
Yeah, yeah.
So, the internet is falling apart on itself. That,
well, they're supposed to announce
good,
the cast soon,
they
too.
They haven't announced any cast. Yeah. Of course it's going to be pushed back.
Right.
They're bringing up the Good Wife spinoff. Pushing that forward.
Yeah.
I never watched that
show. You're
getting
off track.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, I tanned it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
So, Avery Brooks is an interesting dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a different perspective of the show than I ever thought about until I actually got to listen to him talk about it.
Yeah.
And Avery Brooks said that he was trying to show a father raising a son by himself in a world of strife.
Right.
And it was like, you know what? You give a whole different point of view to this show when you think of it that way. That he was just, you know, a father raising a son. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't even have to be a Starfleet commander at that point. But it's just the idea of the father raising the son and turning, you know, Jake turning into the man that he became and, you know, a respectable, you know, well-liked person.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it was just a cool idea that, you know, Avery Brooks looks at it as this just a father raising a son.
It would have been very easy for them to make Jake be a brat.
Oh yeah.
And like, you know, he had his moments.
Yeah.
Like, but,
well,
any
like a
kid
would, you know,
but any kid being pulled off of Earth, his mom just died.
You know
his dad,
he's already like, you know, 3 or 4 years since his mom's been dead.
His dad is distant because he's dealing with his stuff and, you know, still trying to be a good dad.
Yep.
You know, I think, you know, they just handled everything so well.
Well, and it was interesting when they introduced Ben's father and that this show the parallels between the father, the grandfather, and the son.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think, like, Ben's dad had raised him from a teenager by himself because his quote unquote mother had passed away. And then finding out that his mother was actually not his real mother, that, you know, it was a lady who had, you know, abandoned them and eventually was revealed to be one of the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
So tying Ben more to, you know, his destiny was already written as a child, as a, you know, being born in that. But it was just, when he talked about that and talked about the show, it was like, yeah, it gives you a different perspective of what he was acting compared to what they were writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, which I always find fascinating, is the process of what these actors are doing for their characters.
Yeah.
And that. Oh, one other thing on this show that was like kind of pure awesomeness is they go back to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention
that. Yeah. So there's an episode where Kira and Bashir are coming back from the Gamma Quadrant through the wormhole and something happens and they get knocked into the parallel universe, the mirror universe, and find out that
it's a Klingon Cardassian alliance.
Yeah, it's a Klingon Cardassian alliance. It happened and Spock had died because he decided to follow Kirk's example.
Yeah.
Our Kirk's example.
Right.
And that the the Empire had fallen and, you know, the Cardassian Klingon Union had taken over. So we got to see dark versions of a lot of characters, which Nana Visitor does like an extremely awesome job as the intendant. You know, we got to see Jennifer Sisko come back.
Yeah.
And got to see her die again.
Yeah.
You know, spoilers for poor anybody Sisko who hasn't watched. Well, that's the thing, is like seeing her die that time because Jake did not see her die, just knew that she had died.
Right.
And this time, her sacrificing herself for him, and that because she fell in love with Jake. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was the son she never had with the Ben Sisko from that universe. And it was one of those things where she dies for him, and to show like how mature he had become, he sheds a few tears, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he definitely, like we said, he grew up. He became a man on this show.
he recognizes that it's not his mom,
right?
But like, he's still sad that this person died.
I think
and
it was
sacrificed.
Finally him coming to terms with his mother passing away, because I think he still had a lot of that baggage too. And you know, for him to see her actually die, it's like he finally seen it happen. And that, but yeah, there was just the Mirror Universe had some dark stories, some fun stories, and that I think they did one a year pretty much after they introduced it during the second season.
Was it five? Three, four, four.
What?
They did four Mirror Universe episodes.
Oh, I think they did more than that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did more than that.
Oh.
And Worf shows up as the regent, and it's just fun because like, when Worf shows up, he actually says, "Make it so."
Yeah.
And one episode, and it's like, how awesome that he threw that in there. So, and
do you ever wonder what the evil Picard would have been like?
Yeah. And you know, they did that in the novelizations. Yeah,
but
I
mean, like, there's the novelization, but then there's Patrick Stewart playing evil
Picard.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. You know? Like, if he would have, you know, been, they've done so many different Mirror Universe stories that it's like, it would be cool to see a portrayal of that. Done, but I mean, you know, it was fun. Tuvok showed up from Voyager in one of the Mirror Universe episodes,
right?
And it's just like, you know, it was cool that they acknowledged where people would be and what was going on, and that. So, you know, just a fun little, if you're a Star Trek fan, the Mirror Universe
definitely
is a fun thing to acknowledge.
All right, I think it's a good place to call it quits.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Star Trek Deep Space Nine, it's all on Netflix. Go watch it. It's awesome.
Yeah, as you'll see on the list that we put down, I think
there are
listed a lot of episodes and just said all of season six and all of season seven.
You've probably got a solid like 20 plus episodes and then all of season six and seven.
Yeah. So like Next Generation, I literally picked what would be a season.
Right.
And then this one, I did you three seasons.
You're just like, here, just watch the series.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Literally, it's...
Because next week for Voyager, it's going to be watch the premiere, watch the finale.
there's some good episodes in there.
Watch the premiere, watch the finale.
Wow.
Anyway.
I'm going to make you watch some episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
All right. All right, guys.
No, it's definitely... Yeah. I mean, you know, none of the Star Trek series are bad.
No.
There's just... some bad episodes throughout. Like I said, most of the episodes of Deep Space Nine are solid episodes. You could binge watch this show and not really like go, that one sucked. But like, you know, when you get in the Next Generation, you get in the, because it's the singular story thing. Right. And I think that's what helped Deep Space Nine was it was an overarching story.
Like, you know, I'm very fond of Enterprise.
Sure.
Because
it had overarching.
It had the overarching stuff.
Yeah.
There are some stinkers.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
there's
a whole first season worth of stinkers.
Yeah.
So.
Well, even during the, then, you know, we'll talk about it, but even during the third season, there's a lot of ones where it's true. And I think because with Discovery that some of these shows should be like shorter seasons.
Yeah, 10 episodes.
Yeah. 10 to 13 episodes. Yeah. And especially with the ones where there's no space stations involved, because it's like the space station does bring the story to the station and then expands it out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, you can find us online at infamouspodcast.com. We have new episodes every Friday, and occasionally we have a bonus episode on Tuesdays.
Which will be coming up.
We will have one coming up soon. So we are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Infamous Podcast. We make it really, really easy for you. If you like what you hear, and you're a big fan of Star Trek, go ahead and pop over to iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, wherever you're listening to this. And a 5-star review would be awesome. It helps us move up and will help us do cooler things for the show in the future.
Yes.
All right. I'm Brian Tudor. You can find me online at Brian Tudor on pretty much every social network.
Johnny Potter at Instagram and Twitter.
All right.
And I'm on Facebook.
Yeah, you are on Facebook. All right. Well, on that note, you guys have a great day, night, evening, weekend, morning, mid-afternoon snack, whenever you're listening to this.
We'll see you
later.